Welcome to Let's Talk About Tests Baby, a weekly podcast about software testing, QA processes, agile, and other general geekery. My name's Jem Hill, and I'll be your host. Hello listeners, welcome to episode 29, recorded on the new shiny microphone that I bought for myself and the podcast with some birthday money. Before I jump into this week's episode, I have a number of things I want to say. Firstly, I am fundraising. I'm trying to crowdfund at least partly towards getting to Test Bash in March, as I've never really been to a test, well, I've never been to a testing conference before. And I am spoiled in Manchester where everything is free or quite cheap. And I'm looking at about the cheapest I can get it is about £550, which doesn't sound like a lot. It's not a lot. It's just a lot for me at the moment. So there is a donate link on the website. And I've had two donations already. Thank you to Mark Tomlinson and Richard Bradshaw for the donation. I'm also going to be getting some stickers for the podcast. I've been speaking to Katie Corey, who did the logo. And I'm going to be getting some sticker-suitable logos as well, which I'm looking forward to, because everyone loves stickers, right? I do anyway, and my laptop is crying out for a Let's Talk About Test sticker. Also, listeners, I am talking to someone about coming on the show and being interviewed, so that's still very in the beginning stages of us sorting that out. So I will keep you posted on that as details emerge. Very exciting times here in Let's Talk About Test Towers. Also, in the past week, was the first video from Whiteboard Testing, which is about regression testing, which I have not seen yet, but I am going to be watching over the next couple of days. So much stuff going on, listeners. But I'm going to leave all that for now and talk about what I want to talk about this week, which is usability testing. I kind of spoke about this in episodes 23 and 26, but I wanted to delve a little bit deeper. So I've mentioned before that as a QA, I'm partly customer facing, and how I've acted as a bridge between users or product owners and devs, and as such, we need to be able to interact with both. Which means we kind of have an insight in the kind of usability testing we need to do. Obviously, there are best practices or whatever that you can adhere to, but you also need to look at the context of the project, which is something I've mentioned before. When I spoke to Chris back in episode 11, he mentioned that at the BBC they have a user testing lab where they get people in to test their stuff, which I'm still ridiculously jealous of. I would love to see people testing something that I've, or using something that I've tested, like, that have had no interaction with the project and might not even be that techie, just to see the gaps that I'm missing and the biases that I've got. The closest I've come personally to into contact with anything like that is user testing, which is a company that has a like a catalogue, if you like, of people. Catalogue is the wrong word. Who will test your site or app for you, and the feedback sent to you via the company. So these people are from various demographics, and you can get anything from just heat maps through to videos of the screen and audio feedback as well on your product, on your website. I've worked at a company that had someone give feedback on their website to see if there's anything that they could do to improve it, because they weren't getting as many conversions that they'd like, and this is one of the things they were doing. And it was, the feedback was very awkward. These people are being paid to test, so they felt like, you could tell they felt like they had to give feedback on every bit of the site, even if it was something that didn't necessarily need any feedback because it was just so ordinary. It was just the website, like the menu was at the top like you would expect. But because they're being paid to do that, they felt that they had to give feedback, and so they weren't engaging kind of naturally with the product. They were looking for things, essentially, which isn't necessarily the best way of getting feedback. Compared to users using the product as they would if they came across the product naturally. ThoughtWorks published a blog post a while back on guerrilla testing, which is literally just getting people off the street to test your product for a short space of time in order to get candid user feedback and testing, because they're not expecting it. And because it's very much a come test this for 5 minutes, let us know your first thoughts, and then that's it. It's a way of getting very sort of open feedback, and it's an interesting concept. Obviously, it requires both logistical thought and some hand-holding to get useful feedback. Like, I expected X, not I think there should be a dark blue, and the kind of thinking that I talked about way back in episode 23. But again, it's a good way to get that sort of candid feedback that you wouldn't get if you hired people to use or test your stuff. One of our projects was recently in public beta. So the old site was there, the new site was on a different URL, and you could use the new site and do a feedback survey. And then the results were fed back. If there's anything that needed changing, then that could be put into the backlog and changed before the site went live. So it's a nice sort of halfway between paying people to test the site and traditional user testing, in that you've got users using the site as they would expect to, but they're also choosing to use that site over the current live site. So there's that little bit of choice there that may or may not influence some of the stuff, that some of the feedback that they give. And there's some situations where you can't do user testing for whatever reason, whether that's just the awkwardness of sorting out those logistics, especially if you're aiming towards a specific demographic. There might be non-disclosure agreements in place that means you can't let anyone outside the company say, look at the work that you're doing, things like that. So in those sort of situations, you've got to try and do user testing without actually getting members of the public to test the project. The team I work with were pretty good at this sort of thing. We'll give projects to other testers within the team to have a look at a feature to see if it makes sense, whether that's just from a, can you just check that this is right, or I can't decide if I think this is confusing because I'm overthinking things, or if this is a little bit counterintuitive. We've also had apps tested by pretty much the majority of the office at the same time. And while it doesn't do load testing, it certainly tests certain multiple connections and just a range of, you know, browser, computer configurations, devices, things like that. So it's quite nice to get that sort of feedback from people who haven't used or worked on the project coming in cold and getting a bit of preliminary feedback there. I mean, it is only good for finding things that aren't quite intuitive. It's not good for specifically testing if what you've built meets the needs of the user. And obviously, in our sort of work, my sort of work where we're building websites, it's impossible to get the needs of the user because there's so many of them. But you can go for enough coverage that it's intuitive enough to most people to pass that sort of bar. Because if you use as the public, there's no way you can make the site fit the needs of everyone, because there's different expectations and ways of engaging with computers and devices, and there's so many different devices and browsers and breakpoints, accessibility, technical or physical attributes that you need to take into account to cater to users. There's a whole bunch of contexts that you think about all the way through the build process, and you can't hit all of them. I mean, there's a reason that the WCAG says that, first of all, even if you get AAA accessibility, you still won't be catering to everyone, and that AAA isn't even possible or sensible for all types of content. And it's the same across things that other than accessibility. You can't meet the needs of everyone. You can just meet the needs of most people completely, and then you can incrementally meet the needs of others. So you're not necessarily saying this is inaccessible to certain users, it just won't be as accessible to some users as to others. And the same with, it won't work as well on a phone that has its own browser compared to, say, Chrome on mobile, or even Firefox on mobile and things like that. You've got to take those balances in with what's sensible. And it's the same with usability testing. If you can't do user testing for whatever reasons, you've got to make the effort to make it as usable as possible, but you can't necessarily make it so it's perfect for everyone. I mean, before starting the project, some product owners and clients will be able to give you demographic data and data from, say, Google Analytics, so they know what sort of browsers and devices are used most often on the site, which helps a lot with what you need to aim for. And we generally tend to workshop with clients to try and get that sort of information, as well as what they expect from the product that we're building for them. So you've got, it may only be a first approximation, but at least you've got some information there of what you need to aim for across the board. And then you get UAT, which means the product owners and stakeholders testing it, because sometimes we've had anything from just the product owner testing it and passing it off themselves up to a very wide range of people at the company or organisation testing it across browsers and devices and stuff. And so the feedback from them is quite interesting, because while the demographic of people working for the client or the client is not necessarily the same as the people using the product at the end, like the client's users, it's still one step removed from the developers and QA testing it because they've not worked on the project for weeks at this point. They've not got that level of interaction, especially at the start. So that feedback becomes incredibly useful because it gives you insight on some of the biases that the client has, which is useful going forward in the project, and also the sort of feedback you can expect and the sort of usability that they're aiming for as a client, and whether you need to meet that, or if you're not meeting that, or whether you need to push back and go, well, actually, we do it this way because of these best practices, or because this makes more sense in the context of this project, stuff like that. We do sprint-based UAT, so we get UAT roughly every 3 weeks, which means we can catch things early and often, and we integrate that feedback going forward so the issues can be caught, say, in sprint one, aren't then continued throughout the rest of the sprint. The sprints, they are fixed early and often as well. We also have walkthroughs every sprint internally. So lead dev, usually the front-end dev, QA and PM and design will sit down, go through that sprint's work and look at it as a whole, as well as each feature, which sometimes catches things, especially sort of from a front-end designy kind of perspective. They generally pick up on stuff that maybe we've missed or maybe not missed, but now they've seen how the design's been implemented, they can see how they need to change certain bits and how to make certain bits better. It's also nice to sit down and go through everything so we can see where we are in the project as a whole. And it catches little things, especially, again, it's another device generally that we're using it on, but that we're reviewing things on, so it's another opportunity for all of us to go through and catch things that may have been missed. So it's not perfect, because testing never is, and it's probably not as good as getting users to use our stuff and feedback on it. But we plan, we get our quality baked in throughout, we get feedback early and often, we get as many different eyes on the project at various different points as possible, which means that we catch as many issues as possible and kind of, while not circumvent the need for usability testing from users, we certainly minimise that need as much as possible, because it's not always possible to do stuff like that. And I am going to wrap this episode up here. Thank you for listening. Show notes will be up on the site, as always, as well as all the ways to get in touch. So check out letstalkabouttest.xyz for all show details and to see the link to donate to my Get Me to Test Bash campaign. Thanks for listening. Bye.